All right. How is everybody doing on this fine, fantabulous day? I'm still having the coughs, man. So, real quick, please go down to the show notes and smash around on all of that fun stuff, all that social stuff down there. I got Twitter, I've got YouTube, I got Instagram. Should be my email down there, naturallyminimalist@gmail.com. And contact me and let me know what you think about the show. Okay? I produce this podcast on Anchor. And I know that it's out there on iTunes and Stitcher and all that, all the other places. But what I don't get to see is the comments. Okay? I don't know if you are commenting below in the show notes or whatever, I don't get to see that as far as the Anchor app goes. So if you really have a comment, okay, go to the show notes and find the social stuff and go to Twitter and contact me and say, hey man, I listened to episode 5 and I thought it was awesome. I loved it. It was great. And you can do the same at Instagram. You can do the same, you know, email me. Let me know what you think. We can have a little bit of a discussion and maybe, you know, it moves into another podcast or something along those lines. Okay? Let me know what you think about the show and let's move on with the show. I think I'm falling apart here. Alright, so in the last episode I took it to some extremes to see where this thing goes in my mind. You know, in my mind being this perfect world. Okay? And I said a lot of things in there that I'm gonna have to break down some more. Okay? Now I feel like I owe it to the listener, to the brand, to break it down a little bit farther than just, you know, saying these things. Well, how did you get to this point, Rich? Well, look at it this way. Uh-huh. Okay? But for right now, all right, I'm going to go with, you know, what's on the other side of minimalism? What's on the other side of this extremity? And in a materialistic society, I feel all of these things, the cars, the bling, the phones, the internet, the shoes, the clothes, all of these things are a distraction. It's a distraction from the self. Society, civilization, advertising, whatever, has set up this narrative that, you know, you have this hole in your life, that you are incomplete. Okay, this you that you are there. You, if you're a chain, there's a few links missing. Okay, I prefer the whole metaphor where there's a hole in your life and you've got to fill in this hole with something. And they don't tell you what this something is. Okay, all they tell you is that there's a hole in your life and you've got to fill it in with something. And you've got to purchase this something. And, you know, in order to purchase this something, you have to have money. And in order to have money, you've got to work. You've got to have this job. Okay? And in order to get this job, you've got, you know, you could have this lower job that you don't have to have a whole lot of prerequisites to get, you know, going to McDonald's or Walmart or whatever to get this job, to make this money, to get this stuff. But they add this extra little twist in there that says you could spend this time going to more school. In order to get this more school, you're going to have to spend more money. But you don't have a job to get this money. But no worries. No worries. We'll loan you the money. Okay? And you can pay it off a little bit at a time. Okay? No big deal. You pay us a little bit at a time. And, we'll take care of you getting an education. Because, hey, you know, you've got this degree that's going to allow you the possibility of getting this great job. And with this great job comes lots of money, and you'll be able to pay off this loan, no problem, no big deal, no big deal. Okay? What they don't tell you is that you're probably going after this degree in a job market that's super saturated, and there's hundreds or thousands, possibly even millions of people with the same little piece of paper that you've got trying to go after the same exact job. What they didn't tell you is that there's a possibility that you're not going to get a job, that you're going to have to work at McDonald's or Walgreens at this low paying job. Not trying to diss on McDonald's or Walmart or anybody else. Okay. I hope to one day have my financial life in such a state that, you know, it's not a big deal to work at those places. To work at a low paying job. Okay, but had I gone to school for 10 years, you know, and now I'm 28, 30 years old, going into the job market, trying to go into the field that I've gone to school for 10 years for, and find out that there's all of these other people competing for my job, and I may or may not get a job in my field to pay off the student loan that I had to take on this debt that's compounding interest daily. That's becoming more and more of a burden as the minutes and seconds roll on. Okay. And for the most part, yes, I realize that there are noble professions out there, like being a doctor. You have to go to school for a long time to do that. Okay, but even doctors rack up this enormous amount of debt in order to be this noble profession. Police officers. In some cases, okay, I know you can go to the police academy and you can be an entry level police officer person. Okay? But some of these law enforcement officials go to school for X amount of years to be, you know, more than just, you know, a beat cop. You know, not to diss on them also, but there are higher levels to every job that require a bit more education, experience, that type of thing that you've got to, you know, that you've got to put in for, kind of thing. Okay. But a lot of these jobs that we have are, you know, they are very unimportant things. Okay, in the grander scheme of things, you know, we've gone to this trouble of locking up the food. Okay, and by that I mean, there are only certain people that you know, either are allowed to or have the knowledge to create food. Okay. I use the example, or I use the phrase allowed to, because, you know, it may be a bit of an extreme, but some places, whether it's a small place like a homeowners association, a neighborhood like that, or in some cases even some cities, have gone to great lengths to more or less outlaw as many levels of self-sufficiency as possible, including gardens and rainwater collection. Okay, on a federal level, the national government, back in the 50s, I believe it was, they made it a crime if you did not hand over every last little bit of gold that you had. Because of, instead of our money being little slips of paper that represented a piece of gold, a weight of gold, instead of carrying around, you know, these giant bags of gold bricks and gold coins and whatnot, you know, the gold was kept in the banks, and they handed you little pieces of paper that represented certain amounts of gold. Okay, and people owned at their homes physical pieces of gold. Like, people had bricks of gold, people had gold coins, and they were worth something. You could take them to the store and trade this piece of gold for this stuff. And on a federal level, they forced you to hand over all of that gold. Now, I'm not as clear on the details on whether or not they gave you the proper market value for that gold in the fiat currency that we have now. But our money used to be worth something tangible, worth something real, versus this fiat, faith-based currency that we have now. It costs more money to print a dollar bill than it's actually worth. Okay, just to give you a bit of an idea of what's going on here. Okay. But it's all based around this idea that there's this hole in your life. And you've got to have this job. And you've got to earn this money. And you've got to buy this stuff. What it is that's required to fill this hole is up to you. But we're going to advertise all of this stuff, all of these cars, all of this jewelry, all of this stuff, fancy clothes and shoes and hats and all this stuff, and you've got to figure out what this thing is. So you buy one thing after another, after another, after another, and you think you finally found this thing. And you bring it home, and you're like, I've got the thing. I've got this thing that makes my life complete. I'm whole now. I'm so happy. And you get home, and you put it on the shelf, and now that you've got it, and you sit there, and you're like, now what? I spent all of my time, this huge amount of time, making this money so that I could afford to go buy this thing. And now my life is complete, right? And then you're sitting there with your thing, and you're loving it, and you're stroking it, and you give it a name, and you've got all of this emotion and all this wrapped up into this thing, and you're sitting there watching TV, and you realize that there's this new thing. Like, whoa, wait a minute. Now all of a sudden I don't feel complete again. And this thing that I spent all this time, you know, I traded all of this life, hours, days, weeks, years of my life for this thing. And now that I've got it, I see that there's this other thing that I've got to spend more hours and days and weeks and months and years of my life trading away, doing this thing that I probably don't like doing, to get this paper that doesn't really mean anything, to buy this thing that means even less than that, because there's going to be another thing that comes along that tells me that my life is still not complete. And over and over and over and over and over and over again. For all of the rest of your life, from the beginning of your life to the middle of your life to the end of your life, that's it. That's what our lives have become. Chasing after one worthless thing after another. It hurts me to say that. That I've spent the last 41 years of my life chasing after all of this stuff. Cars, clothes, houses. And for what? You never ever really own it. Okay, on a governmental level, you never ever really own your car. You never ever really own your home. Because even after you spent the last 5-10 years paying off a car, if you don't pay that property tax, they're going to take it away from you. Even after you spent the last 20, 30, 40 years of your life paying off this house, if you do not make the property tax payments, they are going to take it away from you. They do not care that you spent all of this time paying for this thing. It is still theirs. And if you don't give them their money, they're going to take your property away from you. They don't care if there's any sort of sentimental attachment. When I met my wife, she was pregnant with my youngest stepson. And we'll go back even further than that. I've known who she was before she had any children. And we were kind of back and forth. It's a weird story. If you get to know me enough on a personal level, you'll probably hear, you know, the full story. But whenever I met my wife, she was pregnant with my youngest stepson. And when my youngest stepson was born, we were on our way to the hospital, and they made me pull the van over, and I delivered my son on the side of the road. Okay? We still own that minivan. There is a lot of sentimental attachment to that vehicle. It's our first vehicle as a family. It's the first big, major thing that we owned as a family that we've paid off, that is our thing, that we don't owe anything on. We don't have any payments to make as far as car payments go. Okay, that's our thing. There is a lot of sentimental attachment tied up in that piece of property. And the government could give a huge crap less. Because if they don't get their money, they're going to take that thing away. Okay? On a less physical plane here. Okay? You never really own that property either which way, because you don't get to take your toys with you when you die. Okay, you don't own the land. You don't own the house, because eventually, even if you lived forever, eventually time and nature is going to deteriorate that thing to the point where it breaks down and returns back to the earth. The wood is eventually going to break down. Okay, look in the example of 8-tracks. Okay, for those of you too young to know what it means, you listen to music on a little teeny tiny box, an iPod, an MP3 player, okay, that holds thousands of songs on this little bitty thing, right? It used to be, before that, CDs. And CDs held, I guess at best 20 songs sometimes. Okay? And then, hold on a minute. There it is. Okay, I see it. I can hear the sirens. I couldn't figure out where it was coming from. Oh, here comes the fire truck. That doesn't have its sirens on. Okay, where was I? Very distracted now. Okay, but, it will eventually go away. So nothing that you think you own will you ever really own. You are eventually going to die, and your grasp on this physical thing will go away. somebody else is going to own this thing. Okay. So, you know, with that, I think I'm going to pause because I've got a big delivery to do, and I will be right back. Hold on. All right. So, I feel like I have given a pretty thorough excuse for why possessions are an unnecessary distraction from the self. Okay. So, what's left? The self. You. And all of those intangible things that bring joy to life. Okay. Think of something as simple as an orange. Okay. If you've got an orange, grab the orange. Okay. I'm going to do a little experiment here. Okay. If you don't have an orange, just play along. Okay. You've got the orange in your hand, right? And you can feel all the little bumps on the rind on the outside. And you can smell it and you can feel it. It's a nice bright orange. It's ready to be eaten. Okay? And you grab that thing with your hands and you stick your nails in there and you tear it open. And whenever you do that, the juice, the zest, the smell, the smell gets in your nose, the wetness of the juice gets on your skin. You can feel it and you can taste it, and it's an experience. And you peel all of that rind off of there, the skin, the shell, whatever you want to call it. You set that off to the side. And then you've got the fruit, the edible portion. And you break it open, and some people have the self-control to take this orange and break off each individual piece and let it sit there. Me, I'm not one of those people. Okay? I've got the ball of orange there, and I open it up, and I peel one piece off, and I throw it in my mouth. And while I'm chewing on that piece, I'm peeling off the next piece, right? And to sit there, just you and that orange, and fully be there in that moment. No kids, no spouse, no significant other, no friends, no distractions, period, zip, zilch, nothing. Just you. And the only thing that is in your focus is that orange. And that experience that you're having in there, and you're chewing on it, and you're feeling all the little fibers of the fruit and the, you know, each one of those little wedges has its own little layer of skin that's holding in all of that juice. And you feel that skin, and you feel the fibers of the fruit inside, and the juices, you know, it, that plus your saliva, there's just too much for the mouth to contain, so it dribbles down your chin and into your beard. And you do this over and over and over again until the orange is gone and the experience is complete and it's done. Okay. Something about the human mind. Okay. If you relive this experience over and over and over and over and over and over, a bunch of times a day, you know, several times a day, over several days, over several weeks, over several years. I sit here and describing this experience with the orange was a real wow moment for me. That orange, you know, even the 20 minutes or so that I went over this experience in my head while I was paused and doing the delivery, you know, sitting there and going through this experience in my head, was such a wow, amazing moment. And I didn't even have an orange. It's been a while since I've had an orange. Couple of weeks, I'd imagine. Okay. Now, as awesome of an experience as that was, as awesome of an experience as that is, with that orange, to, you know, to whatever degree you want to drag it out over, you know, X amount of minutes or X amount of seconds. You know, I love eating oranges. They are very delicious, and I can eat one very fast. But to do that several times a day, over several days, over several weeks, over several years, several being a word for many, not seven or five, but a few days, several days. You know, several feels like a word that's bigger than a few. You know, a couple is two, a few is three, four, five-ish. Several is, you know, six, seven, eight, nine, ten-ish. You know, and then the words get bigger from there. Okay, but, you know, a bunch of times a day, over a bunch of days, over a bunch of weeks, over a bunch of years, that orange, that experience, it's not quite as awesome. It's not quite as exhilarating. It's not quite as ecstatic. Take that orange experience and apply that same thing, that same experience, both sides of the fence to anything else. Any other food, any other relationship, any other thing. Okay, and it's, and that special becomes less special. Like you've got a car. Bought a brand new car, the brand new Mustang. Okay, with the Shelby Cobra package thing it's blue, it's got the white race stripes on it and the you know, all the little Shelby stuff going on, right? And you know, I admit, yeah, that's a really special thing. And then, you know, day one, super awesome experience, super awesome special. And then day two, over and over and over and over and over again, until, you know, it's worn, the novelty of it is worn off. Now, I get why people think that, the Mustang is a super awesome car and everybody wants one and blah, 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 blah. I've never been one of those kind of guys. I could appreciate the muscle car and the icon that it represents. I get it. But it's not something that I've really always kind of been into. It's not. I've always been more of a import. Actually, I've always been more of a S10, a small truck kind of guy. You know, me and one other person sitting in the cab of the car or of the truck, and then in the back there's, you know, room for all the other stuff. You know, I've always been more of a small crowd kind of guy. You know, it's more personal. I had a car like that. I had an S10 truck with the Extreme package with 2001. This car was awesome. Now, everybody's like, oh, Rich, hey, your truck is so awesome. It's so cool, blah, blah, blah. And I, you know, it was a stick shift. And I, you know, I get all leaned back and low in the seat. And I got the stereo turned up real loud. And it was a wow experience for me. But then, you know, day after day, after week, after year, you know, it wasn't quite as special of a thing as it was that day I walked onto the lot and saw that I want this car. This is my car. And we get it and we bring it home. And, you know, I got seat covers for it and the cool little, you know, I was a carpenter at the time, and I had the cool little box in the back that held all my tools, and I had a second box that held all my toys, and I had all this stuff going on in my car, and it was, you know, all part of the experience. It was a really cool thing, and then it stopped being a cool thing. It had wore off, and I saw the new model the next best thing came out. Like, whoa, my truck is crap. I have to have this truck. You know, it's little moments like that to get the wheels turning. Like, okay, Rich, well, what's next?
How much time we got here? 40 minutes. Okay, I need to stop off here and hit the restroom, and I'll be right back. All right, so what is the thing after all of this, after you've eliminated all of the stuff, after you've eliminated all of the distractions, all of the advertising and all of the stuff, and you realize that this whole that civilization and society and advertising and the narrative and all these things are trying to get you to fill, and you realize that there is no hope. That you are complete. Okay? That you find out that, you know, unfortunately, your whole existence is for somebody else's benefit. And not in the most noble of manners either. Existence, if you have a job, if you're paying taxes, if you are if you are falling for the schemes of advertising and all of that fun stuff, then your life is being lived for somebody else. Probably somebody that you will never ever meet. Probably somebody that you will never ever hear of. Okay? Yeah, it sounds like a bit of a conspiracy theory, and you know, it in my mind it's true. If you look back at history, at the primitive people, who did they pay taxes to? When they harvested their crops, who did they where was the store that they went to? What job did they have that they earned a wage at, that they had money to purchase, to buy the land that they lived on, the water that they drank, the food that they ate, the shelter that they lived in? Money come from? Who gets the taxes that they paid on it? See where I'm going here? There was no money back then. There were no taxes. There were no governments. There were no... The only thing that there was the self. Now, I'm not saying that we need to tear it all down brick by brick and recycle it all and return it back to the earth. Hey. But at the very least, I personally feel like there needs to be, at the very least, two scenarios that happen. That there be a, you know, in one scenario, there be either a decline or a concentration in technology. Okay? And not so much technology specific, but civilization in general. Okay, that, you know, the law of the land, like when the United States was founded, they laid claim from, you know, the Atlantic coast to however far west this land goes. And with that national spirit, you know, there was a very huge genocide that occurred, something far greater than you know, the Nazis killing off the Jews. Something right up there with the rakes of Genghis Khan and the genocide of the Native American people. American people, indigenous people in general, you know, primitive people that live with the land inside of these natural cycles, they are rare to find now. You have to go out of your way to find these people. Whereas it used to be, you had to go out of your way to find civilization. Okay. Maybe not so extreme of a thing that we have to go out of our way again to find civilization. But I think it would be a pretty nice thing to, you know, maybe go 50-50 and, you know, civilization gets this chunk of land and everybody that lives in this chunk of land lives by these rules, and then everybody outside of this chunk of land, well, it's, you know, it's wilderness, it's primitive, it's the way nature is supposed to be. Yeah, because where I'm at right at this moment, there is a huge, massive chunk of wilderness. It's the Mark Twain National Forest. And there's, and in this forest, okay, even though there aren't any, you know, law enforcement officials or anybody to care, the same laws that govern Idaho are in place here. The same laws that govern Washington, D.C., thousands of miles away from me, somehow still have some sort of a hold on me here.
Okay, I gotta pause for a minute. I'll be right back.
Okay, so either a drawback of civilization, where, you know, maybe it's not so much the federal government that has, you know, the law of the land from one ocean to the other, from one country to the other, over all of these states, all of these little places, okay? But perhaps the law is limited to the city limits, that the people that want to live within the city and be, you know, governed by these rules and these laws and such like that, that's it. You don't, you know, you as a citizen or a civilian or whatever word you want to use for it of Marshfield, Missouri, you know, if you venture outside of the city limits, then, you know, the rules that protect you inside the city no longer apply. Okay, the laws of nature apply. Something else about that, instead of that, perhaps that civilization can, you know, concentrate itself in one spot instead of, you know, spreading out all over the world to try and concentrate itself in you know, large amounts of civilization in small areas instead of, you know, small areas with large amounts of civilization. Okay, like, you know, I've heard a theory, an idea, somebody had said something about if stacked up right and planned out correctly, you could fit the entire population of Earth in the borders of Texas. And I was like, wow. Okay, now that's a something. To put all of Earth's population in that little of an area, and to be able to do all of the things that we do now inside of our civilizations right there in that one spot, and it be, you know, I jokingly use the phrase within walking distance. Okay. But if you were to box up and ship off all of the things that are civilization and you put them in Texas, there's going to be a lot of trains, a lot of buildings, a lot of elevators and escalators and jetways, and you probably wouldn't need everybody on the planet having a car. You know what I mean? It can all be concentrated right there in that one spot. Now, I said there were two things that I wanted to see happen, and I pretty much, you know, balled them all up and into those, you know, those two ideas of the same condition. I wanted to see, you know, a situation where there is a place, a large chunk of land. In my mind, it used to be something as simple as like Rhode Island, you know, where all of us people that are sick of all of this civilization and all of this advertising and all of this crap, BS that we've got to put up with on a daily basis, because if we don't, then, you know, you put us in jail, you take away our families, you make life miserable for us so that we comply with your rules. There is a huge, huge, I would guess, a huge amount of the world population that's within the bounds of civilization that would say, you know what? If you did concentrate all of civilization within the borders of Texas, I wouldn't live there. Well, where would you live? Somewhere without a name. In the wilderness. Somewhere else. Not civilization. Somewhere where there is no money, where there is no taxes, where there is no employment. Somewhere where it's you living within nature, and if you don't get up and take care of stuff, then you're not going to eat. Okay, you're not going to, you know, it's on you. And the punishment is you go hungry for the day, or you go thirsty for the day. And if you have kids, well, you're going to have to try even harder. Because you don't want your children to starve, right? Feel like I've ranted on long enough. Go ahead and wrap this one up and calm down and move on to a different subject. Okay? Or maybe the same subject, I don't know. Go down to the show notes and let me know what you think. Okay? Any of the things that I talk about, feel absolutely free to contact me on any of the social stuff and start a conversation with me about it. Okay? And until then, I'll talk to you later, man. Bye.
The podcast you just heard was published with Anchor. Got something you want to say to the creator of this show? Send them a voice message using the Anchor app, free for iOS and Android.